The following is a Sunday feast lecture given by His Holiness Reverend Sri Prabhu on the Bhagavad Gita, Chapter 11, Text 1, on August 26, 2001, in Philadelphia.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya. We are reading from the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Today we're beginning chapter 11. We've been going through for some time now in sequence every Sunday. We've been coming regularly. We started actually with chapter 7 because the six central chapters of the Bhagavad Gita are the ones that everything leads up to and amplifies on with the core. The Bhagavad Gita is said to be in these central six chapters. There's 18 chapters, it's three divisions of six. So now we've come to chapter 11, which is called The Universal Form, sort of the dramatic climax of the Bhagavad Gita. Although in the previous chapter, in some ways, we had the philosophical climax. So the text is behind me. It's been transliterated from the traditional Devanagari script into the English, or Roman, I should say, the Roman alphabet. It's got a few special diacritic marks. So anyway, we can chant this now, everybody. What I'll do is I'll say each word, or sometimes a couple words, say them after me, and then responsibly we'll chant each pada, each line, responsibly. So, chapter 11, text 1. Translation. Arjuna said, "By hearing the instructions you have kindly given me about these most confidential spiritual subjects, my illusion has now been dispelled." Srila Prabhupada's purport. This chapter reveals Krishna as the cause of all causes. He is even the cause of the Mahavishnu, from whom the material universes emanate. Krishna is not an incarnation. He is the source of all incarnations. That has been completely explained in the last chapter. Now, as far as Arjuna is concerned, he says that his illusion is over. This means that Arjuna no longer thinks of Krishna as a mere human being, as a friend of his, but as the source of everything. Arjuna is very enlightened and glad that he has such a great friend as Krishna, but now he is thinking that although he may accept Krishna as the source of everything, others may not. So, in order to establish Krishna's divinity for all, he is requesting Krishna in this chapter to show his universal form. Actually, when one sees the universal form of Krishna, one becomes frightened, like Arjuna. But Krishna is so kind that after showing it, he converts himself again into his original form. Arjuna agrees to what Krishna has several times said. Krishna is speaking to him just for his benefit. So Arjuna acknowledges that all this is happening to him by Krishna's grace. He is now convinced that Krishna is the cause of all causes and is present in everyone's heart as the Supersoul. So, text again. Arjuna uvacha madhanugrahaya paramam guyam madhyatma samjnitam yat tvayoktam vachastena mohoyam ligato mama. Arjuna said, by my hearing the instructions you have kindly given me about these most confidential spiritual subjects, my illusion has now been dispelled. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Kinamana Namaste Sarasate Deve Gauravani Pacharane Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschachade Satarane Om Agyana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chaksuru Miritam Jain Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vanchakalpa Tripishta Kripa Sindhavi Pachat Titanam Bhavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha. This Bhagavad Gita is a dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna. So you see here this chapter begins with Arjuna's speaking. It's actually just one section of a much larger work, the Mahabharata, which tells of the basic storyline, tells of all the events leading up to the battle of Kurukshetra. And this Bhagavad Gita is spoken just at the beginning of the battle. Arjuna is about to engage in this warfare. He has big doubts about it. And he's in a kind of a super crisis. Krishna, who's also another, who's a king actually, but is acting here as Arjuna's chariot driver, a humble position, actually. Arjuna's request drives his chariot between the armies so he can look over one more time just who's gathered together to fight. And he just doesn't, can't see the point of it. So they have begun a discussion. Arjuna basically wants to know, what am I supposed to do? What is my duty? And the interesting feature of the Bhagavad Gita is it takes this question, what is my duty, out to the last limit. What is dharma? The word in Sanskrit is dharma. The word dharma is translated as duty, but it also means religion, means ultimate truth. So many things are there. This word dharma. So, because one thing leads to another, because what is your dharma, what you are supposed to do? Dharma also means your essence, by the way. What you're supposed to do is given in the Vedas. So what are the Vedas teaching? So what the Krishna is doing is in some ways conducting a quick summary study of the Vedas. Because the ultimate conclusion of the Vedas is hard to understand. That's why in this text today, this word, guhyam, is here. Guhyam means secret or confidential. Confidential means not everyone can understand it or appreciate it. It's not known to everybody. This is confidential. But Krishna, by his grace, is making things that are very confidential quite open and available to everybody. And so what the teaching is Krishna himself is, although appears like a human actor on the scene with Arjuna, Krishna has explained that he's not an ordinary human being, but actually he is the absolute truth in person. And this Arjuna has accepted in the previous chapter. Specifically, he's told Krishna, now I understand that although you're here among us and you're acting in human society, actually you have descended to this world from a spiritual world. Krishna's already explained, I descend every millennium, I have a mission to perform, and now this mission is there too. So Arjuna accepts this of Krishna. We go back in the previous chapter, we'll see what it accepts, that Krishna is the absolute truth. Now there's a word, you know, especially with a capital A and a capital T. People, many times, they think it's a very vague idea. What does it mean, the absolute truth? But this absolute truth is the way we translate the word Brahman in Sanskrit. And Brahman is defined in the Vedanta Sutra, in the second sutra, Janma Vyasya Yataha. And so this is a precise idea of what we mean by the absolute truth, that from which everything has its origin. Janma means its origin. It says Asya and so on. So on means actually origin, because everything is, in these sutras and Vedanta, things are compressed as much as possible. It's information compression long before there were the computers, because people wanted to keep everything in their memory, so they rejoiced to save one syllable in encoding information. So Janma Vyasya Yataha, that from which everything has its origin, by which it's maintained and to which it returns at the end. These are three phases of existence: creation, maintenance, and destruction. So the absolute truth is that from which everything comes, by which everything is maintained, and at the time of when things are wound up again, to which it goes back again. So Krishna has explained this. If I go back to the previous chapter, I think text... Aham sarvasya prabhava matat sarvam pravartate. I am the source of generation of everything. From me, everything emanates. This is the absolute truth. Krishna said this about himself. Iti matvam vajante mam buddha bhava samantita. And the wise who know this very well, Buddha, those who are learned, they engage in my devotional service, they worship me with all their hearts. And then later on, when he's asked by Arjuna, can you explain something of your opulences, your glories, that at least that are prominently reflected in this world, he says, Aham Atma Udikesha Sarvabhutashaya Stitaha. I am the soul within the heart of every living being. It means here the soul of all souls, the super souls. And then, Aham Adischa Madhyamcha Bhutanam Anta Evacha. And of all beings, I am the Adi, means the origin, Madhyam, the middle, and Antas, the end. So again, you see those three phases there. Anyone in Vedic culture will understand, oh yeah, this is the indication of the absolute truth, the beginning and the middle and the end of all beings. And then in the same chapter, go a little further, Sarganam Adirantascha Madhyam Chaivaham Arjuna. Of all creation, Sarganam, this is specifically the word Sarga for creation. Typically use the most, sarga, which comes from a Sanskrit root, sridj. And the basic idea of this creation is that to send forth. Because the idea is that the absolute truth has energies, and when these energies are, so to speak, expanded or manifest, then the creation takes place, and then they're wound up again. It's like some modern physicists have this idea that somehow the universe came about from some kind of primordial explosion, so-called Big Bang, and and they think it will go out, and then maybe they're thinking it'll collapse again. But this is actually something, some movement like that takes place. Of course, in Vedic understanding, the creation begins from very subtle things that we can hardly, like primordial undifferentiated matter, which is quite subtle, and then it kind of becomes more and more gross and differentiated. And then, but the wound up, it returns to that subtle form of matter and is absorbed back into the Lord. So, this is Sarga. So, of Sarga, I am Adi, Antas, and Madhyam, the beginning, the end, and the middle. So here he's explained this quite statement, stated these things about himself. And Arjuna's reaction to all this has been also conveyed in the Bhagavad Gita 10, 12, and 13. He says of Krishna, Param Brahma, addressing him by these names, you are the supreme Brahman. Like the last word in Brahma, Param Brahma, Param Dhamma, the supreme abode. So in this way, Arjuna has, as Prabhupada has pointed out in his purport, has already accepted Krishna. My illusion is over. I understand now who you are. You may appear in the world, and you may act as he's acting now, sometimes on the human scale, but you're not. So what we learn from this is that that the absolute truth is also a person. Many people think of the absolute truth, the beginning, middle, and end of all things, that from which everything's come, as something impersonal. And certainly there is an impersonal feature, the Brahma Jyoti. But the fact that this kind of homogeneous, undifferentiated ocean of spiritual light, which seekers of the absolute truth have encountered by their spiritual experience, not just in India, many places, and there's a wide range of reports about this encounter with this primordial undifferentiated light. People experience themselves coming close to it, merging into it, having a feeling of dissolution of the self, but then somehow or other they bounce back to tell us about it, although they say what they underwent cannot really be expressed in words. And certainly that is experienced. But what the Bhagavad Gita tells us is that this is just one feature of the Absolute Truth. And it's the most easily accessible. It's like the outer precincts of the Absolute Truth. But there's further. If you have the further qualification, you can go through and find out that within that light, and which the source of that light is Krishna. And he says this quite clearly later on in the Bhagavad Gita, Brahmano hi pratishtaham. I am the pratishta, the foundation, the basis, the support of Brahma. Brahmanohi pratishtaha. This is in the Bhagavad Gita. Actually, if you understand the Bhagavad Gita properly, the way Arjuna is understanding, you will not think that the Absolute Truth is only some impersonal energy. But you'll understand that the Absolute Truth, first of all, is a person. Actually, we should understand that anyway, just on philosophical principles. If the Absolute Truth is that from which everything emanates, that means everything that you see in the world has come from the Absolute Truth. And what we see in this world are, among other things, people. I'm a person, you are a person. Where does that come from? It comes from the Absolute Truth. So how can there be no personality in the Absolute Truth? So here we see so many varieties, differentiation, different qualities. In fact, it makes the world quite interesting. If you have no variety and no differentiation, that's called monotony. It's essentially boring. If you have disorganized variety, too much of it, then it's chaos, which is confusing. So usually what people do, at least in art and aesthetics, is they look for unity in variety. You have variety, but somehow it's all pulled together and unified. And the greater the variety, the greater the value of the unity. Well, this is actually the business that the Absolute Truth pulls off in the most excellent way. People may experience this undifferentiated, homogeneous sea of light, but if they are able to go further, they'll experience the fact that there is within the Absolute Truth variegatedness. The Sanskrit word is vishesha. Vishesha, there's variety within the Absolute Truth. If you want to stick to the idea that the Absolute Truth is simply just that, without any variety, then I think you've actually put limits on what's supposed to be unlimited. That's not a good idea. Though another characteristic of the Absolute Truth, for example, is, this is also a fairly universal philosophical definition, ekam eva advitiya, that besides which there is no second thing. One without a second. This is a definition. Because if there's a second thing, then there's a relationship and then there's relativity, so you don't have the Absolute Truth. So when people pursue this line of thought very assiduously, they conclude that there is no world, there is no creation. There's only one thing, this undifferentiated Brahman. And the experience we have of our own individuality, the individual things in this world, is all basically an illusion. It's just not there. And this is propounded even in Vedic philosophy, although you should understand that it actually contradicts the Vedanta Sutra, Janma Dasi Yataha, the Absolute Truth is that from which everything emanates. But they say, well, you know, how can that be? That emanation must be just some convenient way of thinking. But in the ultimate truth, actually, it's not there. But this really does put limits. Then you just have something that's supposed to be the greatest of all, but is cognitively the same as nothing. Just a big negation. But we learn in the Bhagavad Gita that the Absolute Truth does have energies and sends the world forth. Different kinds of energies, spiritual energies and also material energies. Otherwise, the Absolute Truth would be trapped by the limits of his own absoluteness. But he gets around that by expanding his energies. And so there is a second thing, just like we have Radha and Krishna. It's not just Krishna by himself. But there's Radha and Krishna. She represents his energies, specifically his spiritual energies. The material energies, her reflection. So there's Radha and Krishna. There's two, because the Absolute Truth is the supreme enjoyer. You do not enjoy unless there's two. That's why people go out on dates. It's not considered good to stay alone all the time. Enjoyment means two. Of course, people can't find anybody they like. That's another problem. But Krishna produces his energies. He does the best job. He does the best job. And so he expands himself and creates so many worlds. The spiritual world, the material world. Just actually, ultimately, for the increase of bliss. So he's not trapped by somebody's lame idea of what it means to be one without a second. But what is Krishna's world? Why? Here Krishna has a relationship. He has a relationship, say, with Radha. He has a relationship with his devotees. That means he's relative. That's true. Because there is a transcendental way of being relative, which also does not compromise the absoluteness. He's the supreme relative. And he's the supreme absolute at the same time. And he can pull it off. And it's still that he's one without a second. Because what is the world? It is Krishna's energies. And that means this is Krishna in another form. So it's a fact that there's nothing but Krishna. He's all that there is. Yet at the same time, he remains the source, so that nothing is Krishna, save and except his own primeval personality. So while nothing is different from Krishna, Krishna is still different from everything. This maybe we have a hard time conceiving with our brains, but with some spiritual advancement, you can start to see everything in this way. Nothing is different from Krishna, yet Krishna is different from everything. So in this way, he can be everything, and at the same time the source of everything. He can be being itself, and he can be the supreme being among all beings, all at the same time. Certain theologians have claimed he can't do it, but he does. They just don't. They're a little trapped by their own limitations. But Krishna is not bound by those limitations. So this is the important point of this Bhagavad Gita, at least one, is to establish that Krishna is in fact a Bhagavan, the supreme personality of Godhead, not an imaginary being. Of course, we can say, even logically, I think you can show that if the absolute truth, if it's complete and unlimited, also is a person. The next question is, who is that person? Which one? And so the Vedas declare, at any rate, that it is Krishna. That is Krishna. And this is also in the Bhagavad Gita. Of course, Vedaisya Sarava Aham Eva Vejaha. But all the Vedas are just searching after me. At least Krishna discusses this very thoroughly, discusses different claims, other claimants to that position, and other ideas. But the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita, the conclusion that Arjuna accepts, is that it is Krishna. Because full person means he has a particular name, identity, form, so on. Just like we see Krishna here on the altar with Radha, he's playing a flute. How could we ever figure out that God plays a flute? He could play many different instruments. Trombone, trumpet, saxophone. But his favorite instrument is the flute. He does. He also has a bugle, a buffalo horn bugle. But the main thing is the flute. He wears on his head a peacock feather. Not an ostrich feather, not a pheasant feather, but a peacock feather. They're very particular, concrete. He herds cows. There's a rumor that God is a shepherd. But actually, he's a cow herd. At least they got the pastoral part right. But he herds cows. So these things we know. How could we know that unless we are introduced? That somebody has met Krishna and this is what he is like. In fact, a lot of people have come into contact with Krishna and they've reported their experience. But it's not just that we should take their word. One of the persons who reports this experience as well, this Bhagavad Gita, it's not written by ordinary people, it's written by Vyasa. All of Vedic culture accepts Vyasa as a transcendental writer. The people that report these experiences are people who are not beyond illusion. Is that possible to be beyond illusion? Everything, maybe you can't trust the report of your material senses. But if one's senses are spiritually purified, then you can see. Not everybody can see God. That's the big problem. Everybody's saying, oh, where is he? I can't see him. But people are not qualified to see God. We are doing certain things right now that makes us ineligible. We have the capacity, each one of us, for seeing God, just like you're seeing me and I'm seeing you. We all have that capacity. But right now that capacity is dormant. But also we get from Krishna and from Krishna's devotees. This is what you have to do. Do you want to see Krishna? Do you want to actually understand who Krishna is? Be with Krishna face to face? It can be done. One has to have some qualification. This will take you there. And seeing Krishna is not like seeing anybody else, because Krishna is our source. He is the origin. He is already our best friend. And when we see Krishna, we will recognize him. And we will say, oh, you're the one I've always been looking for. Because in this material world, we're all ultimately isolated and lonely. We make friendships with various people, but they have an end. And then we go on, we don't know where. So our condition here in this material world is very isolated and lonely. And we're always looking for a relationship that's lasting and fulfilling. Somebody who's always interesting, funny, beautiful. That's Krishna. So he'll be recognized. So he's not an ordinary person. He is. And when love is placed on Krishna, because he's the root of everything and the source of everything, it expands to include everyone and everything. So here Arjuna has accepted now that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in this chapter, we will get a vivid special effects demonstration. When Krishna reveals to Arjuna the Vishwarup, the universal form. And we'll bring home this to everybody, that who Krishna is, that he is in fact the source of everything. So keep coming and we'll see this demonstration. Okay. Are there any questions, comments? Yeah.
When you perform loving devotional service to Krishna, sometimes the super soul gives you some direction. So how can you get more direction?
But how can you get? Yes, we are directed by the super soul, and Krishna says that he's already answered this question actually in the last chapter. He says that. To those who are constantly devoted, serving me with love, I give them the understanding by which they can come to me. That's how he says, by inside the heart, he said, to show them special mercy, dwelling in their hearts, I destroy with a shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. So what's the condition? The condition of constantly devoted and worshipping satata yuktanam. So two, one thing, bhajatam priti purvakam. So the two conditions, satatam means steady. One becomes steady in service to Krishna, and priti purvatam, with affection. So the more you can increase in being steady in your service to Krishna, not on again, off again, and develop affection and love for Krishna, then the more and more Krishna reveals himself to us. He's already said that as they surrender to me, as they give themselves to me, I give myself back to them. That's the way. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.